Thank you. Thanks, Tori. That's what happens with sponsors. You just go, would you go up there and just introduce me? Never give them the whole story. Let them just, I go, I forgot to tell her she's got to do the chair, too. Thank you, Terry. Yeah, it's been a journey. It's a journey. Hey, it's Sunday morning. Why don't alcoholics do something different? Talk about God for a change. When I sobered up, and this is not a PC joke, politically correct, and it's just humor. It's just humor. It was a long time ago. I sobered up 40 years ago. I used to go to this meeting. It was called the Trinity Group, and they were fun. They were old, someone really old. And they used to say, we'd be at a meeting on Friday night, and I live in Dallas, Texas. And they would say, well, here we are. Here's all the drunks. No, here we are. It's Friday night. The Baptists are in church praying for the drunks, and the drunks are here at AA talking about God. That's what we do. We talk about God. So I'm going to put, Tim, thank you. I have a little story to tell, and it's a story about some of the religious people. There's so many, and they continue today, of course. But where people have stepped in and helped build this foundation, where friends of AA have come to us not knowing how this program was going to work, not knowing anything for sure. Neither did we, as Mike talked about, our flying blind period, but we kept showing up. And what I want to do is just, I'll start with a few things about, I have another joke, but I'll tell you, it's not even as good as that one. Oh, I'm supposed to read something. You know, this is what I'm going to read. I don't have to read it. But what I'd like to share is I have something from, problem is I have too many papers. I have something from Language of the Heart, which I'll read in a minute. But also I'd just like to say the third step prayer. And if you'd like to join, and it doesn't matter if we get it wrong, my sponsor and I would say it every night, and we'd always screw it up, and we'd just laugh. It's not like God's over there waiting, like, they didn't get it right this time. So with that, perhaps a deep breath, a breath of gratitude, breath of blessings for each other. That's God. I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Thank you. And I can hear God calling right now. We're busy. We're busy talking about you, God. Boy, what a journey finding this power greater than myself for many of us. And that's the key. And I think that is the miracle, one of the many miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous, is God as we understand him and how this journey, and I won't go into detail about the journey, but we know it was not a soft landing. It wasn't like, yeah, let's all sign up for that one. We want to believe in God now. No. And today, and I mentioned yesterday, you know, the arch is wide, whether it's in jail or it's in my own home or it's meeting you for the first time. The arch is wide, and we are welcomed in, and that is still, to me, as I stay sober, I think I'm more profoundly touched. That's not the right word, but profoundly changed by this fact that we get to choose a God of our understanding. So what I'd like to do is start, and Tim's going to help me as always. Thank you. We were like, where's Tim? Where's Tim? Go get Tim. thank you. I want to share, I'm going to start with this. I have a few things and a few characters. They are characters, and they've changed our, they helped build this program and our foundation. Not the program, our foundation. And so I just want to start with a couple quotes from Bill Wilson. And these are from our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the references, excuse me, that we make to our higher power, to this gift, whether we choose to call God or not. And he says, be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And that is clear, you know, clear instructions. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, with a little, I don't want any religion. I don't want to see the word God. I hate all that. And what happened is, I live in Texas. We talk about God ad nauseum. It is always there. I'm surprised we just don't bless ourselves before the meetings. We're not that bad, but it's God this, God that. And I didn't hear it for 3 months. I'm talking about the golden threads, slender threads. I don't know why I didn't hear the word God. I'm sure it was being said, but I didn't hear it until I was ready to start hearing things about good, orderly direction. And this is what Bill Wilson wrote. I stood in the sunlight at last. And why don't you choose your own concept of God? That really opens the door. That really opens the arch. You don't need to believe what I believe. Choose your own concept. It was only a matter of being willing, a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. And that's what you still tell me today. Nothing more required of me to make my beginning. And here's Bill Wilson, nothing more. This is what Ebby shared with him. There's nothing more. I saw that growth could start at that point. And one of the things is I see today, at 40 years sober and 72 years old, growth can start at this point. And it does. Each day, our quiet time, each day when I meditate, each day when I talk to another alcoholic, when I talk to my dog, when I show up and I'm a sober woman, it has started. It has started. I have another day. And what Wilson also says, this is one of my favorite, we found the great reality deep down within us. And when I may have searched as an alcoholic and drug addict for this great reality of who has enough money and what's out there and how's that going to fix me, it was a big surprise coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and finding out the deep reality is within me, not to keep searching. These are just some names. I'm not going to read them, but we know our book is filled with beautiful descriptions, understandings of this power greater than ourselves. And many of it is in the chapter We Agnostics. Someone just recently told me, he said, you know, We Agnostics wasn't really written for agnostics, because I think that's a really condescending chapter. You're talking to people who don't believe in God, and then all you want to do is tell them about God. And this person said, you know, that chapter was really written for us, to keep going on, to believe, to get a new understanding, to go a little deeper. And again, that was just like last week, and it's changed my whole outlook on that chapter, We Agnostics. I think it's the most spiritual chapter we have. Creative intelligence, power greater than myself, spirit of the universe. We're walking hand in hand. The promises are so profound. Universal mind, spirit of nature, God conscious, father of light. I will let you find them yourselves. Tim, we're going to go on to the next. I set the timer. I put this up because I just got this too from, I think, wasn't Box 459. It is GSO's new public announcement about the fact that we are not governed, we are not a Christian organization. I don't know, and we're open to all. But I want to highlight some of the points. I really like this. GSO's press release, which is on our site, on GSO's site, since the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, in 1935, members of all faith, beliefs, and traditions have found common ground in and benefited from the AA program of recovery. Another highlight, it is a common, now remember this is 2023, this has just been press release, so it's so important that we keep saying what we are, because many things want to define what Alcoholics Anonymous is. We will define what we are, what we are not. It is a common misconception that Alcoholics Anonymous is a religious-based or Christian organization, but that is not the case. In fact, a fundamental principle of AA is that the fellowship is not affiliated with any religion, nor is it allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Now, we read that at every meeting, but to have to go out to the press and say, hey, let's make it clear, this is... You're welcome. We are open to this. So I really loved seeing this. And the last, but while there may be references to God and higher power in AA, literature, and at meetings, the essence of the AA program is one alcoholic helping another. And that's what we talked about this weekend. It's why we're here. That's what we live, helping one another. So the last part, I'm going to skip that. It says, it's important to remember that AA is not a religious program. A religious organization. We have a simple idea that there is a power greater than us as individuals. What we all have in common is that the program helps us find an inner strength that we have were previously unaware of. Where we differ is how we identify the source. And that's what happened in 1935, before 1935, of course. It's what continues to happen. And I'm going to start with some of the people who saw this and made such a difference. But a little of our history, I mentioned this. Thanks, Tim. Next slide. I mentioned Jesse Penn Lewis yesterday. And thank you, Drew, for talking about Frank Buchman and the beginnings of the Oxford Group. Because, yes, we are. Many, 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 many teachings have come from Oxford Group. We know Bill was a seeker. We know Dr. Bob was a seeker in their own ways. And I talked about Jesse Penn Lewis the other day. The other day. Last week, I think it was. It was yesterday. So she is the evangelical minister. And again, a time when women were not at a pulpit. But this is a woman who also traveled to India, traveled to China, traveled throughout Europe, bringing the message of Christ, bringing the message of what was true to her heart and what she believed. And this is where Frank Buchman went to Keswick Hall and heard Jesse Penn Lewis. And Tim, the next slide, a little more about her. Because what an interesting, you know, what an interesting history. It was just by chance. He went to Keswick Hall because he was to hear another speaker, and the speaker had to cancel. And here is Jesse Penn Lewis, and he listens to her. He is 30 years old, Reverend Frank Buchman. And I love what J.S. wrote. He hears the message of Christ, and I shared yesterday, she's written many, many books. She has over 30 books. You can find tremendous even readings from her books on the web. I mean, everything's there. But Jesse Penn Lewis was this incredible teacher and preacher and a woman, and was there when Frank Buchman came in filled with anger. And what happened is he heard her message. There was a moment of spiritual peak at what God could do for me. This is what he says about sitting in the chapel. After Keswick Hall, I was made a new man. My hatred was gone. I knew I had to write the 6 letters to those men I hated. And we know more about the history of that and the men he hated in Philadelphia, but also, and what J.S. wrote with this writing, the apology that launched a million amends. And what do we get to practice all the time? Certainly I do. Making amends in Alcoholics Anonymous, not just here. Wherever, if I do wrong or I bring hatred or I am upset, I have this great chance to make it right and let it go. So Jesse Penn Lewis, she came to prominence by speaking, writing. She was married, furthering this movement on an international basis. So remember the times. This is, before 1930. She was in 1898 in the early 1900s. So besides being a well-known woman, teacher, preacher, she distinguished her mission further by putting into print her biblical rationale for her call to preach. So no one was ashamed or embarrassed or said too much. A woman of force, a woman who was there at the right time, the right place, and Frank Buchman walks in and he hears her message and starts this way of life for the Oxford Group. So I'm going to talk about Reverend Frank Buchman, and thank you, Drew, for highlighting this. We know more about him, of course. And what I want to say about, what do I want to say about him? Yes, Oxford Group. There's a lot. And I know many of you have been to Akron, and not just Akron. I have a good friend who came to Dallas, and he gave us a talk, great talk, about Frank Buchman. And here's some things, the similarities between our program. I'm not going to do a talk about the Oxford Group because there's so much information, much more depth than I could possibly share. But I find it fascinating. Frank Buchman, call him Dr. Buchman, Doctor of Divinity, he's a Lutheran minister. The similarities, and these are similarities that I saw that I like to point out for me and how I interpreted this. The Oxford Group believed that the root of all problems were the personal problems of fear and selfishness. And page 62 in our big book, third edition, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Oxford Group had 4 practices. to be spiritually reborn. And what's it tell us in our big book? We are reborn. That is one of the promises. The sharing of our sins and temptations with another Christian. We can just find any old drunk, and it doesn't even have to be a drunk. And we could sit down, perhaps, and tell them the worst thing in the world. And they're usually going, okay, I understand. There was a joke at my home group. We sobered up and say, you know, AA is the only place where you can stand there and say, you know, I slept with a zebra. And someone's head's going to be going like that. You're like, yeah, maybe. So, but is this not what we do in our step five? We share. We get to talk about this. And we get to talk about it in a safe, loving way. The next one was surrender our life, past, present, and future, into God's keeping and direction. And we just said our third step prayer and our seventh step prayer, all about just surrendering our life and our will to the care of a God. Restitution to all whom we have wronged directly or indirectly, and it's very much what our step nine is. So this is Oxford Group. This is Reverend Frank Buchman. So when we talk about religious people, his mission was not to sober up alcoholics. We weren't part of this equation at all. But the teachings that we have gotten from this group and our involvement with with Bill Wilson, Ann Smith, Henrietta, Dr. Bob, they were all part of this Oxford group. And this is what has happened. Listening for God's guidance and carrying it out. Step 11, where we pray for guidance. So we know the Oxford Group has gone through some name changes. We know a little more about their history. 1931, it was called the Oxford Group. 1938, it was called the Moral Rearmament. And in 2001, Initiatives of Change. It is still active. A friend of mine, Reverend Bill Wigmore, went to their meeting. It was held in Switzerland. And people still practice the principles of the Oxford Group, and we do too, but we practice it as it has been given and translated to us through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thanks, Tim. The four absolutes, and Drew, you did a great job of talking about those absolutes. And this is what the Oxford Group believed in, what they practiced, what Ann Smith practiced, and how we today, certainly me, I can not judge, I can interpret, I can understand. Is it honest? The four absolutes, absolutely honest. And you can imagine, of course, alcoholics had a problem with the words absolutely, because absolutely we don't do that. And so it's not absolute. We try. That's why we have step six and seven. We try. I try. Absolutely honest, both with ourselves and with others in word, deed, and thought. But very simple. Is it true or false? Absolute unselfishness. How will it affect the other fellow? The third one, absolute love. And I like the interpretation, is it ugly or beautiful? What I'm about to say, what I'm about to do, what I'm about to think, what I'm about to act, is it loving? Is it kind? And these are steps that have taught me this. And lastly, the absolute purity. Is it right or wrong? Boy, that keeps it pretty simple. When I do guidance, and I do practice guidance, and I do practice two-way prayer, it has changed my life, it has changed my sobriety. Going back to what they used to do, the difference in guidance today, and this is what Oxford Group had a little, you know, AA's had a little issue with. They would do two-way prayer, and they would pray for guidance. But they would take their guidance for you, and then they would sit and tell you what they have been guided for you to do. We know how well that would go over here. I mean, geez. I may think I know what you need, but I am not about to tell you anything. But I do ask for guidance for me. And two-way prayer is very, very powerful, and it is what the Oxford Group used to do. So we're going to move on. I got lost in the Oxford Group. Last part of the Oxford Group, and how it translates to Alcoholics Anonymous, but the importance of a religious leader who knew nothing about AA, who wasn't AA at the time, had no interest in sobering up drunks. That was not the mission. We had nothing to do with that. They really were kind of, you know, they were going for the top shelf people, not people that were laying in the gutter and throwing up and can't stay sober. They were going for the Rockefellers and the wealthy people, so it would translate down this message of Christianity, this message of God as they understood God. The five tenets of the Oxford Group, and I leave it to you to interpret them as what they are and our steps. One, men are sinners. 2, men can be changed. 3, confession is a prerequisite to change. And 4, the changed soul has direct access to God. 5, the age of miracles has returned. Remember, we have something in our book, we are reborn. We're rocketed into a fourth dimension of an existence we never dreamt possible. And lastly, those who have been changed must change others. And that sure sounds like the 12th step to me. So Oxford Group, Reverend Frank Buchman, a religious man, non-alcoholic, who laid a groundwork we sprung from, with many other attributes too. So now I want to talk a bit about Dr. Walter Tunks. Boy, and I don't know if Mike's still here, there's 50 different interpretations of how that phone call went at the Mayflower Hotel. I'm thinking, how'd he call these people? He only had a nickel. You know, there's so many talks about this, and I don't think it's really clearly known what happened, but the closest I think many of us have come, Reverend Tunks. What I didn't realize was Reverend Tunks was head of the Oxford Group, so it's not a stretch to think Bill Wilson would call Reverend Tunks. Bill Wilson was a member of the Oxford Group. So here's Reverend Tunks. He's the rector of St. Paul's Church. He's a Lutheran minister. And he's also a member of the Oxford Group. He also was in charge of the Oxford Group. And those threads that Mike talks about, which I love that whole image, I love the reality of it. Reverend Tunks was also Harvey Firestone's clergyman. So see how we're connected to this. Firestone plays a crucial role in the history and the beginnings of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not all by chance. There were threads that were woven. Bill calls Reverend Tunks. Now, Bill has said, Tunks is the word they used in Vermont. It was a kind of a local word, to go for a walk. That's why he called Reverend Tunks. And then there's many things about who he called and when he called, and somewhere in between, something happened, and we have a good idea what, but we don't know for sure. But this is what the interpretation is. Reverend Tunks, Bill writes about it, that Reverend Tunks wasn't quite sure what to do with someone who wants to talk to other drunks. And he tells him to call Norman Shepherd. And Norman Shepherd was leaving town, and he told Bill to call Henrietta. And just by those slight chances, Henrietta knew what to do. So this is Reverend Tunks. And we know Henrietta was friends with Anne and Dr. Bob. We have that history written down. And that's when she invited Bill to the carriage house on the Goodyear estate. Reverend Tunks delivered Dr. Bob's eulogy. So there was still such a close relationship. So we owe a thank you, of course. Here's Reverend Tunks being part of the foundation of this fellowship. And then we go on to people. I read this yesterday. She is not a religious figure. She was a good Christian woman. She believed in the power of God. She believed in guidance. And I just like that she said, we are out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be in the Rotary Club. Because God is your only source of power. So that's why I included her, because she played a crucial role, but also it's good for me to remember. I find as I'm staying sober and doing a lot of things, there's some objection sometimes to talking about God, which, fair enough, you know, I don't get on the plane today and go up and down the aisle. Do you believe in God? I found him in the history. No. But for me, those precious two words, Bob Earle, an old-timer, talked about the most two important words he ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous is, for me, I want to hear the word God, for me. It lets me know I'm not in charge. And we can't really talk about this without mentioning Jim B. We talk about the characters we have. There's so many. But Jim B was the fourth AA after Fitz. And Jim was our atheist. He also wrote his story as a big book, Vicious Cycle, in the second, third, and fourth edition. So was he a religious person? He helped get us to the point of God as we understand God. He and Hank Parkhurst were atheist and agnostic. They didn't want to hear all this God in the big book. So he opposed it, quite, and I'm sure he was quite vocal. He went on to do many, many things to help Alcoholics Anonymous. And without that input, without listening and having that arch built wide, we may not be sitting where we are today. And there's three types that we're helping Bill with this, you know, the early group. And what Bill called them is the conservatives, and that was the people who supported that the book ought to be Christian. We are Christian-based. We come from Christian Foundation. The book needs to be Christian, our big book. The liberals, no real objection to the word God. Okay, you could have God. Yeah, we're okay. And then the radicals, and they're like Gnostics and the atheists. And that is where Hank Parkhurst and Jim Burwell came in. And they had a problem, and you know what? To our, just a gift, that they were listened to. Because now we have a book that is open to many, many people of many, many faiths all over the world. So Bill writes this in AA Comes of Age. Such were the final concessions to those of little or no faith. This was the great contribution of our atheists and agnostics. They had widened our gateway so that all who suffer might pass through, regardless of their belief or lack of belief. And I think that is a major gift. So talking about God, talking about the big book, talking about religious people who guided us, and the people who weren't religious who guided us. It takes all of us. The next one, Tim thinks, I don't expect anyone to be able to read this, but again, a shout out. This is what Box 459, this is a newsletter, a quarterly newsletter that comes from our GSO office. It used to be called Markings, and they changed it now to Box 459. Sign up for it. It's free, and there's always, yesterday I shared some stories that I've gotten from that, and this one is, I didn't want to go through each one. I have most of them. The Clergy and Alcoholics Anonymous. And this was printed in May, June 2004. And it just highlights some of the great teachers, some of the great non-alcoholic, the people of religion who gave so much to our credibility, our encouragement, and had, if I dare use the word, faith. Faith in us when perhaps we had no idea where we were going. So with that, we'll go over to Reverend Sam Shoemaker, that of course we know much more about Reverend Sam Shoemaker, and I am consistently and constantly blown away by this. Reverend Sam Shoemaker, he an Episcopal priest, so he was a prolific author. He's many, many books, and he was a gifted speaker. And Reverend Shoemaker, he was considered one of the best, of his time. And his sermons were syndicated for distribution by tape and radio networks around the world. He was the head of the United States headquarters for the Oxford Group. Now, these are men who met also prior, like Frank Buchman, Reverend Frank Buchman, Reverend Sam Shoemaker. They met while they were traveling. They went to China. They brought the message. It was very, poor Chinese. They were there to stop them, you know, as Gary told us last night, or the night before, you know. They stopped them, you know, trying to get them off opium. And then they went to go give them all this religion. Different people, different times, but it seemed like China was the place to go. So Sam Shoemaker traveled into China bringing the message of God. And he met Frank Buchman. And he became head of the Oxford Group movement at one point. Frank Buchman stepped aside. We know there was a lot of controversy about the Oxford Group and a lot of things. And I'll just say it, Frank Buchman, it's probably in the back there. I didn't see it. I'm sure Terry saw it. Frank Buchman really believed, as a Christian and as a man of worth, that he was to take the message to people of power, and if he could turn them or help them see the power of Christianity, of peace, it wasn't just even Christianity, of peace in the world. The intentions were good. And he went and tried to get an audience with Adolf Hitler. It was not the time, and unfortunately it never became the time. And yet he was quoted as saying Adolf Hitler was one of the great leaders. And there was no coming back from that. There were many other factors. That is not the only one, but that is the one that's kind of like that sensational, like, whoa. And so Sam Shoemaker was now head of the Oxford Group. He led a team, Sam Shoemaker, and we have that great story where they lead a team to Akron because Bud Firestone, who was Harvey Firestone's son, was a bad drunk. And in the Oxford Group, he became sober. And Harvey Firestone invited everyone to come to, invited the Oxford Group. 60 people went, and they were booked into so many different churches to bring the message of the Oxford Group. So Akron has these strong roots. Again, the thread became roots where it was planted in Akron. And Sam Shoemaker was very much part of that. An eloquent, kind man, a powerful man who really loved the church and loved bringing a message of hope. So many things, you know, there was a serious disagreement with the Oxford Group. The founder and Frank Buchman and Sam Shoemaker, they separated. Now, what happened with the Calvary Church is Frank Buchman actually almost set up his headquarters there. That was not the primary purpose of the church, and it worked for quite a while. But then it was a while, just like Alcoholics Anonymous, we had to start distancing ourselves because we're not Oxford Group, and we have our own traditions, and we needed to have work with our alcoholics. So they separated, and Sam also had a time where he separated, detached from early AA. But again, he and Bill Wilson were very good friends. Sam Shoemaker's international focus, interdenominational focus at the Oxford Group was significant influences for the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, because we started meeting at the Oxford Group. That's where Bill Wilson went when he went to the Calvary House, because he was looking for Ebby, and what he found there too was Reverend Sam Shoemaker. So it says that 1934, 1939, Bill Wilson attended the Oxford Group meetings at Calvary Church, and we know that the Oxford Group was already so involved in Akron. So a little more about Sam Shepherd. Next slide, Tim. I'm going to mention Calvary Church before I go any further. This is right here. Someone said last week, I guess everyone says it last week, because I wouldn't remember if they said any further along than that, but said, you know, what's exciting, many things exciting about our history, that's why we're here today, but also that it's recent. It wasn't 5,000 years ago. It wasn't 500 years ago. The church is here in New York, Calvary Church, and I say this because if you have a chance to go to this church, I've been there a couple times. It was one of the highlights. I called them. Told them we're coming. We all are enthusiastic alcoholics. But the church, it's located at Park Avenue, an Episcopal church, beautiful old church. It was founded in 1822, a strong connection to Alcoholics Anonymous. They have so many AA meetings there. They have one meeting that Joni and I went to. It's called Friends of Bill W. And to sit in that room and to see the kitchen and to see a needlepoint of the absolutes, the four absolutes, and know this is where Sam Shoemaker was. In the church itself, there is a beautiful stained glass window donated by Roland Hazard. And I feel like I can touch this history. It just brought it so close. So I'm just putting this in there to encourage you. If you're in New York, go by the church. You can call them. This beautiful minister came down to meet us. We were there. That's us there. No, you might go back. Am I show us? No, I watch. There's the needlepoint of the absolutes, and I loved what their sign said. Enjoy your forgiveness. That's their sign outside. And a group of us. Now you can move on. We went to the church, and she looked to be 12, but she was an associate minister, and she came down and. We were so excited to be there. It's only as we are. We're in AA. We love Sam Shoemaker. And we're all dressed. You know, we're dressed. And everyone in New York is in black. And we're like, ah! And then we said, will you pray with us? Because what else do we do? Alcoholics, we're like aces when it comes to praying. And I said, would you say a blessing for us? And it was a very special excursion. That's why I mentioned Calvary Church. And it's so rich. I mean, Eleanor Roosevelt was baptized there. And for us to be able to reach out and touch this history and be part of it was just very, very cool. So we're talking about Reverend Sam Shoemaker, and I talked about the church. He ran the Calvary Mission, Rescue Mission, that catered mainly to saving drunks and down and out people. Very different than the Oxford Group's. Primary purpose, if you will. But, you know, and they had it was a good idea. It wasn't us. If we just wanted to go to the upscale drunks, we'd be in a lot of trouble because they're not going to be upscale forever. So we were able to take that. Sam Shoemaker taught the concept of God being that of one's own understanding. And that is a gift that we have received, a God of our understanding. And that's why these are very broad-minded Episcopal ministers. In a drunken state, Wilson went to the Calvary Rescue Mission in search of Ebbie Thatcher. So the 12 steps never stop. It wasn't just that Ebbie went to his house. It continued on. And if Bill hadn't gone there looking for Ebbie, perhaps he would not have met Sam Shoemaker. It was there that he attended his first Oxford Group meeting. And I love this. He writes this, Bill Wilson, and would later describe the experience. Now, Bill, Ebbie's not there. He meets Sam Shoemaker. It's the Oxford Group, and they're witnessing. And this is what, and Bill went up because he didn't know what else to do. He's at the Oxford Group. He says, penitents started marching forward to the rail, unaccountably impelled. I started too. Soon, I knelt among the sweating, stinking penitents. What a great experience. We like that in our co-founders. You know, you just get up there. And how many people have been, you know, witnessed, and et cetera, et cetera. But I like the description. The spiritual substance, this is from Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob also, the spiritual substance of our remaining 10 steps came straight from Dr. Bob's and my own early association with the Oxford groups, as they were then led in America by that Episcopal rector, Dr. Samuel Shoemaker. So what a debt we owe to Reverend Sam Shoemaker, non-alcoholic. The next slide, Tim, because this is something that, and it's all online, and rabbit holes. I went down one. I actually joined this other group. It's only $25. Like, I'll just join that. I'm like, you got to get out of here and go feed the dog. What the church, this is what Sam Shoemaker wrote and was published. It's well known for this. What the Church Has to Learn from Alcoholics Anonymous by Sam Shoemaker. We have come a long way. And it was people and ministers, priests, nuns, religious people of all faiths who helped us, totally helped us. And what he writes, this is a speech, and it's been reprinted at the 20th anniversary convention of AA in St. Louis, but it was reprinted and it was published. And what he writes, Sam Shoemaker, God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. And if there are people who have known something about weakness and can't stop drinking, it's alcoholics. During the weekend of the 4th of July, this is what Sam Shoemaker writes. It's like three-page talk, writing. And his experience, during the weekend of the 4th of July last, I attended one of the most remarkable conventions I have ever expect to attend. It was a gathering in St. Louis of about 5,000 members of the movement called Alcoholics Anonymous. And to have a man so noted and so respected and so followed to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous like this, again, opens that door, opens our arch. I think we may see an effect of AA on medicine, on psychiatry, on correction, on the ever-present problem of human nature, and not least on the church. It's very powerful. And lastly, I just summarized a few points. AA indirectly derived much of its inspiration from the church. Now perhaps, this is Sam writing, now perhaps the time has come for the church to be reawakened and revitalized by those insights and practices found in AA. What a gift he gave to us. And he was not the only one. I just have uncovered, I mean, there's so much that one could talk about with this. And I covered a few of them that we know about and some we don't. Of course, Sister Mary Ignatia. And we talked about her yesterday, the contribution Sister Mary Ignatia has given to our program and still continues to give us, the help that she gave to Dr. Bob and thousands of alcoholics, and the book is very, very good. I want to go to the next slide, Tim, because I thought this was interesting. After Dr. Bob's death, she transferred, not because of that, her order told her to go to Cleveland. And she went to Cleveland. She worked at the charity hospital, Cleveland Charity Hospital, and it was in desperate need of some repair, and she needed a place to treat alcoholics. And what happened, she was greatly loved. And what happened, Cleveland, men and women, but men who worked in construction, who were electricians, who were plumbers, they donated their time, their materials, and they built that ward for Sister Ignatia and for us, no charge, just out of love and service. It says here, a group, 10,000 more sufferers found AA there. When I went last time, it was a treatment center. This past time, it was closed because of COVID. But it's worth definitely going up and hearing more about Sister Ignatia. And we know she in there, she wanted to name the ward, the Robert Holbrook Smith, but she couldn't do that. So she calls it Rosary Hall Solarium, but it's RHS, Robert Holbrook Smith. This is what I want to share with you. I thought this was so beautiful, and we don't hear much about it. She got a letter from John F. Kennedy. Now, we have come a long way, right? From a nun who had to go into a rest for 9 months because she was having a nervous breakdown to question it, but found that little room for Dr. Bob where that drunk could go in that night. And now getting a letter from JFK. And what he wrote, I mean, it was his office, of course. Dear Sister Mary Ignatia, through an admirer of yours, the president has learned of the fine work you have done in the past at St. Thomas Hospital in Akron and more recently at St. Vincent's in Cleveland. He has been informed that a large number of citizens have been restored to useful citizenship as a result of your efforts. As you have been a strong influence for the good of many people, you have added strength to your community and nation. And it's from the office of John F. Kennedy. And here is Bill Wilson remained very close to Sister Ignatia. It's a beautiful story. When she died, there were 3,000 people at her memorial, Bill Wilson being one of them, of course. And this is briefly what he responds. Bill Wilson, because it's quite amazing, you get a letter from John F. Kennedy. He writes, we have read the marvelous letter which President Kennedy requested be sent to you. It reminds me that I have no words to tell of my devotion and my gratitude to you, of the constant inspiration you have given me and so many over the years by your example of the finest in all that is spiritual and internal as well as temporal. And that's Bill Wilson writing to Sister Ignatia. So just a little slice of our history that is so beautiful. And I want to go on to our next. I'm going to speed up. I always say that. I go, I don't think I can fill the hour. I'm going to have a little show. And I go, oh, my God, will I shut up? So here we go, though. This was so interesting. Reverend, what's his name? Harry Emerson Fosdick. I looked at Fosdick. Well, yeah, I know Fosdick, Riverside Church. And then one day I went to the Riverside Church because it's right next to GSO office. And what a contribution this non-alcoholic, religious, Protestant minister has given to AA. And here's Henry Emerson Fosdick. He reviewed the first edition of the Big Book. And this is a man of great power. This is a man of great worth and known and published. Ministers had great influence at this time, especially powerful speakers and truly passionate. Great influence. And he reviewed the first edition, Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how more than 100 men have recovered from alcoholism. So it wasn't actually the Big Book, it was the manuscript. In 1939, giving it his approval. Members of Alcoholics Anonymous point to this review as significant in the development of the AA movement. That was one of the great things, and I'll address it just briefly, and Mike has talked about it. Gary certainly has talked about it. How important it was to not offend the church, whether it be the Catholic Church, Protestant Church. We had to walk that line because this door was going to be open to everyone. And we couldn't have someone saying that's against God, that's against the Catholic Church, that's against Protestant beliefs. So for him to give us a review, thanks, Tim, next one. And who was this man? He was important all through America as an influential Protestant liberal leader during the early 20th century. He was even more important in early Alcoholics Anonymous as one of the most famous outside supporters of the new AA movement and one of the first major public figures to write admiringly about it. He wrote the first review of the Big Book, and after it came out, it appeared in the Religious Digest. Remember, we are a Christian country, and people, that's what we did. We didn't have YouTube and email and phones, and we went to church. A lot of people went to church. It was important foundation of our country. And this is what Fosdick says about why AA is so successful. We're non-sectarian, and we're tolerant of all religions. That is what Reverend Fosdick said about Alcoholics Anonymous. He went on to say, he's talking about we, are convinced that for the hopeless alcoholic, there is only one way out, the expulsion of his obsession by a power greater than himself. Agnostics and atheists, along with Catholics, Jews, and Protestants, tell their story of discovering the power greater than themselves. That's what Reverend Fosdick had to write about us. Much more. It's all online. And then lastly, they agree that each man must have his own way of conceiving God, but of God himself, they are utterly sure. So a great debt, and I want to share a little more about Fosdick. Excellent. Thanks to him. Reverend Henry Emerson Fosdick was on the cover of Time magazine. So we're talking serious here. This was a man that really had a lot of influence. He was the founding minister of the Riverside Church. Again, our living history, it is there. You could go into that church and see the pulpit where Reverend Fosdick preached. It was a church. Martin Luther King Jr. called him, Fosdick, one of the greatest preachers of all times. Martin Luther King went there, preached there, as did Nelson Mandela. So this is a very significant church, and it is still there and quite stunning. He was one of the liberal Protestants' most influential voices. He was a proponent of economic, you know what I'm trying to say, Christianity, pacifism. Remember, these are liberals. And civil rights, whose radio sermons were big, very important. And writings reached millions. And here again is the thread that Mike talks about, and I'm going to talk about now, because it's such a beautiful image, and it's so true. Millionaire John D. Rockefeller, someone who has been in our history that keeps resurfacing, someone that we were meant to meet. He asked Fosdick, it was Rockefeller who went to Fosdick and asked him to head up this new church that Rockefeller was going to build. And Fosdick, I love this quote, and Fosdick had been in another church and things happened. He was a little too liberal and he was asked to leave. But Rockefeller knew this was a man who had a message. And Rockefeller wanted to support this, and he was building Riverside Church. And this is what he says. Fosdick declines because he says he did not want to be known as the pastor of the richest man in the country. I don't think, it doesn't sound bad. Rockefeller responds. Rockefeller had great insight. He said, do you think that more people will criticize you on account of my wealth than will criticize me on account of your theology? And Fosdick became the head of Riverside Church. And I want to talk a little bit about, I know, there's a book, it's at the Akron Intergroup, and it's just, you know, Rockefeller knew what to do with money, he knew how to give it away, and he knew when to not give it, and we are the recipients of that wise decision. Riverside Church, it's right there. It was conceived and built by John D. Rockefeller for the intention of Dr. Harry Emerson, or Reverend Emerson being the senior minister. The pulpit, as I mentioned, has people from all over who have spoken there. It's a very important church. It's an interdenominational church where people could be freed from having to conform with doctrine and dogmas of any particular denomination. And here we go again with the thread. Harry Emerson Fosdick's brother, Raymond B. Fosdick, played a key role in administering many of John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s philanthropies. So see, they're connected. We're all connected here. And this is all building that base for Alcoholics Anonymous. Rockefeller and Fosdick brothers liked the Alcoholics Anonymous movement because it embodied so well some of the best ideas of liberal Protestantism. So, but thank goodness we're not affiliated with a religion or sect. That's what I would share, because if you go to New York, Interfaith Center is right next door. It's a beautiful building. And Rockefeller built that also. It's on Riverside Drive. And his request, why he built it, he wanted nonprofits to occupy that building. He wanted organizations, services that would be in, not just preach a message of God, but be God-oriented, be service-oriented. And that is where GSO is. We go into what is affectionately called the God box and go into the office at GSO. It's a blast, and you walk right next door, and then you can see where Reverend Fosdick preached. So we're all connected, and that was what I wanted to say about Riverside Church. You got to be, I love when someone says, you're a bit of a geek, but that, you know, we went to New York to kind of do the Bill Wilson pilgrimage. It was great. We had a blast. So next one, thanks. The God concept. This, I just, you know, there's lots of writings on this, but again, a man that perhaps we do not know, but what a role he played, Reverend George A. Little. He wrote an article, The God Concept in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was, I think, 1940. He was a minister of the United Church of Canada in Toronto. He happened to read a review. He read Reverend Fosdick's review, and he ordered himself a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was so impressed, he bought six more. And then he went to the Yale School of Studies on Alcoholism. This was Reverend Little from Toronto. Because he knew something, he had guidance, he knew there was something he had to do. He was granted, because it was so difficult to get books in and out of Canada, he was granted distribution rights for the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He went back to Toronto, Reverend Little, 1943. He and Reverend Price, who I do not know, but a man of cloth, non-alcoholics, they had a meeting. They gathered six alcoholics at a restaurant downtown Toronto. And they talked about AA, and they distributed those books, and that is how AA got to this part of Canada. So alcohol, and what he writes in this God concept, which is a beautiful read, Alcoholics Anonymous, which now has 1,700 groups, 70,000 members, and an influence far beyond its membership, is a spiritual movement, a faith cure for alcoholism. Men and women find that they've been trying to live without God, and they then discover how to live with God. So a beautiful writing again, and it changed so much that he's now in Toronto. So the next slide, and I'm going to pick it. Oh, yeah. How can I say, oh, yeah? I'm just going to tell you this. It's Father Ed Dowling. What can we say? There's so much to say about Father. Someone here is a Father Ed. Chris is a Father Ed Dowling aficionado. Who wouldn't be? This is a big part of our history. Father Ed, 1940, he visited Bill Wilson. It's a great scene. If you haven't watched the documentary about Bill W., this is a great scene when he shows up at the 24th Street Club, and Bill's depressed, and Bill thinks, oh, it's just another drunk. And then Father Bill comes in, he realizes he's a Catholic priest and begins a relationship, a spiritual advisor, a sponsorship, for over 20 years while Father Ed Dowling was alive. And what happens is, this is a Jesuit priest who worked with Bill in many capacities as a spiritual guide, as a sponsor, as a friend. And he was struck by the similarities of AA and the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. It's one of my favorite stories, because he goes to see Bill in New York. He had been to a meeting in Chicago, and as a Jesuit, it's the founding of St. Ignatius. St. Ignatius founded the Jesuits, or the order was founded on St. Ignatius's teaching. And he goes to see Bill, and he says, I wanted to talk to you about this. The 12 steps are so closely similar to the teachings of St. Ignatius. And Wilson, he figures, had some kind of contact with Ignatian spirituality. And Wilson says, so who's St. Ignatius? And I think, you know, that thread. I mean, we just keep going. We just stumble into these things and we keep going. And it's divine order and divine providence. The book, The Soul of Sponsorship, it's a compilation of letters of correspondence between Bill Wilson and Father Ed. And we know, we've talked before of Bill having these dark moments, very dark years. And Father Ed was there to help him. He was a beacon. And the next slide. What he says. And so who is Father Ed Dowling? He was born in St. Louis, no surprise, Irish Catholic family. His brother was also a priest. But he played semi-professional baseball. He was just a human being like all of us, a great guy. He worked as a journalist. His nickname was Puggy. How could you not love someone named Puggy? And he, in 1940, because of his love, his connection, and knowing Bill Wilson, he helped bring Alcoholics Anonymous to St. Louis, Missouri. And if you're in St. Louis and you get a chance to go to their inner group, which I did a couple of months ago, so much information about Father Ed. And they know about him, and the archives are not in the, some are, but at St. Mary's College. He not only, now he had a problem with smoking, he had a problem with eating. He blew up to like 293 pounds. So he's a flawed man like we all are. But he worked the steps on them. And he loved Bill and he loved Alcoholics Anonymous because he worked the steps on smoking, worked the steps on eating, and gosh knows what else. 1944, he brings in a conference called the CANA, C-A-N-A. It's a 12-step program. He realized those 12 steps would work in many, many areas for many things. And it was a 12-step program for struggling Catholic couples. So it's called Couples Are Not Alone. He brought in Recovery, Inc., into St. Louis, again, an organization, just into St. Louis, and it was an organization that worked with people with addictions. And then he started, and this is amazing to me, that a Catholic priest at this time starts something to help divorcees, anonymous, because being divorced was not okay, especially in the Catholic Church, it was not okay. Yet he uses those 12 steps to help people who are suffering because of going through divorce. The next one, Tim, please. So there's a lot of copy here. I'm not going to go through it all, she says. What Father Dowling said, he believed the 12 steps were a divinely inspired spiritual program, non-alcoholic, a religious man, and what he brought to us and what we brought to him. And he told, this is the one thing I do have to share because it blew me away. I know a few things, but not much. So Bill Wilson's writing to him, and Father Ed would help him. And here's what Bill does. He reported in the book, the sponsorship, Bill Wilson reported it took him only 20 minutes to write them down. He's talking about the steps. It was one of the best and most impressive examples in AA history of the Oxford Group's technique of automatic writing, where God himself used our minds and hands as instruments to write out his message to us. And that's what we talk about with two-way prayer. When we talk about centering prayer, or quiet time, direction from God. So Bill writes this to him. Then he writes to Father Ed that Bill Wilson received help from over there. I love this part. Referring to the spirit world, specifically from St. Boniface. Now, I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I've heard a lot of saints. I'm like, who the hell is St. Boniface? It was like Bill saying, who's St. Ignatius? But in his belief and what happened to Bill, he had guidance from this saint, St. Boniface. And to Ed Dowling, this speaks so, remember, he's a Catholic priest. That is heresy, talk about guides and spirits coming to you. What he wrote back was that several times, oh, he didn't write, I don't have what he wrote back. He was so loving. And he said, well, sometimes we get guidance. He didn't say, are you out of your mind? You're talking to dead saints here. No, he guided Bill Wilson. And that was a time when Bill felt, and I don't know, he had a spiritual experience. He had a guide. Bill considered being a Catholic, but also knew that this would really endanger AA. Father Ed provided a quote to go on the book jacket for the 9th printing of the first edition of the Big Book, which we know Mike has. This is what he wrote on the cover, inside cover, for Alcoholics Anonymous. God resists the proud, assists the humble. The shortest cut to humility is humiliations, which AA has in abundance. The achievements of AA, which grew out of this book, are profoundly significant. Non-alcoholics should read the last 9 words of the 12th step. I had to look it up. And to practice these principles in all our affairs, the last 9 words of our 12th step. So thanks, Tim. Next one. So for Father Ed, it's not the last one. He also was very involved in civil rights. Remember, a lot of these priests and ministers were liberals. They were concerned with social conditions in our country. And in the article, which is online by Glenn Chestnut about Black AA, there is a story about Father Ed, and I got this picture from that.
that he was instrumental in getting a headstone for a man that history was really going to forget about. And this was, his name is Dred Scott, and 100 years before that, he was a slave. And he went to the Supreme, got himself to the Supreme Court trying to make a plea that he be released from slavery because he was living in a free state. And they said, no, it doesn't apply to you. And this is a man who helped change a lot of things, this Mr. Dred Scott. And here is Father Ed Dowling 100 years later, realizing there's no headstone. And he founded it. He got a movement, got a collection. So that's the kind of man that Father Ed was. Thank you. We're going to move on to... We're never leaving Father Ed. It was so good. Yeah, I dug down deep in this one. This is what he says. This is the letter from Bill W. to Father Ed. Father Ed had visited them at Christmas time. Father Ed was not a well man. He was younger than Bill, but he was stricken with arthritis badly. And he says, Bill writes, everyone can feel that you practice the presence of God, and that is so much better than preaching. So thanks, Tim. I'll go on to the next one because there's a lot more written about Father Ed, and I will leave that to you. But the Father Ed, a new book by Don Goldstein, Father Ed Dowling by Glenn Chestnut, The Soul of Sponsorship. And I put this in because, yes, I found it, a 12-step approach to the St. Ignatian teachings. And then if you haven't seen this, and I know you have, it's my favorite documentary. And it has a scene of Father Ed going up those stairs at the 24th Street station. And that is always imprinted in my mind. It wasn't easy for him, and he was determined to meet that Bill Wilson. And there's Bill Wilson thinking it's just another drunk. So thanks. We're going to talk about Catholics and AA pioneers. I am going to speed it up because Catholic members were being told that the practice of OG, which also stands for old gangster, in case you didn't know that, I have a friend who's a policewoman, went against what the Roman Catholic Church preached. They shouldn't or even were forbidden to go. It's just teachings. You know, Catholics are not meant to do confession. We're not meant to share with you the fifth step. That is a sacrament. It only goes to a priest. And this was where Akron, now Bill, a New York office, had left the Oxford Group 2 years before Akron did, and Mike made good references. They had such a close relationship. Dr. Bob was friends with everyone there. This Oxford group has saved his life. But he finally made the break, and Clarence Snyder was very instrumental in that, and Mike had talked about that. And last part, when AA broke off from OG in Cleveland, the practice of surrendering by accepting Jesus wasn't used so that AA would be open to all. So it sets a time and place in the religion and how important this role was, and that we did make those breaks from the Oxford group. I'm going to, I have a special thing today, but not him, Father Ralph Foe. This one is such a character. He wrote the Golden Books. Reading about him was a trip. I mean, I have to say, I knew a little bit. He's from Indianapolis. Is our friend still here from Indianapolis? He wrote 14 Golden Books, and these are treasures. You could still find them on Amazon. I found them in Akron at the Intergroup. They're still being read and used today. He wrote under the name of Father John Doe, D-O-E. He wrote several books. He was the first Catholic priest to come in, now that we know of, to come in to Alcoholics Anonymous. It set a whole new tone. It gave us a whole new direction. This indeed is open to all. And he also is the first one who invented what we know as the AA retreat. He started a retreat, a weekend. It was Father Ed Dowling who was talking to him about it. So also he was really instrumental in starting the National Catholic Council on Alcoholism. And there's a whole chapter that's devoted to helping priests and religious people who have alcoholic problems. We have come a long way on this one. The next one, I just want to share this. He had a little problem with anonymity. And here he is. Look, that's not him. That's Steve Martin. Look, here he is, a four-page spread in Look magazine where he says, a priest's own story. I am a Roman Catholic priest. I am an alcoholic, and I am a neurotic. Now, people didn't really get used to reading a lot of this, but he also talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. So he and Bill eventually had a little disagreement about this. We kind of like our name not being associated in magazines. Look magazine, 1958. I thought it was pretty funny. They reconciled. Because Bill has had his own problem with, before we knew better, his own problem with anonymity. So this is Father Ralph Foe. He strongly disagreed with Father Ed Dowling. Ooh, fight, mum priest. I just think it's, how do we ever get to be unity? How do we ever get here and get all this? But again, this is a man who was an alcoholic. And he came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was able to say he's a priest. He was able to stay. He was able to claim his seat. And he had Bill speak at the NC, the National Clergy Conference on Alcoholism. It was a major move that Bill Wilson spoke there, and they were thrilled to have him. And it is online and is so interesting. I'll sum it up what Bill said. Every thoughtful AA, this is 1960, realizes that the divine grace which has always flowed through the church is the ultimate foundation on which AA rests. And then he'd be in big trouble today. Our spiritual roots, our spiritual origins are Christian. So next slide. Now, here we're getting somewhere. We're always somewhere. Father Joseph Martin. Some of us, he died in 1990, so some of us remember this, the Chalk Talks. They're all online on YouTube. He began drinking excessively, and his behavior became more and more erratic. The archdiocese finally said he had to go to treatment. This is Father Martin. He is considered a pioneer in the addiction treatment field. The three main reasons people drink, what he wrote and what he talked about, the need to escape, the desire to overcome pain, and finding a sense of well-being. But more fun is I met someone here yesterday, and Linda is going to just say a few words about her experience with Father Martin. So we are living history. Linda G.
I'm Linda Glennon, and I'm a very grateful sober alcoholic. My sobriety date is October the 8th, 1978. I have to make one little correction. Father Martin passed in 09. He passed in 09 with 51 years of continuous sobriety. I was a young girl when I came in here, and I had been showing Chalk Talk. Now, if there's anybody in here who does not know what that movie was, because I showed it on Reel to Reel back in the day, you can still go online to YouTube, put in Father Martin Chalk Talk. Please do not cancel it out because you think it's outdated. Wisdom is never outdated, and it is just full of wisdom. But I had been showing this as an Al-Anon member for a long time. And every time I watched it, and I said, I think I got to go to AA. I belong up one more level here. And it kind of validated that many people had told me, get up there, you know. However, it's a bit of a funny story now, but it wasn't then. I was supposed to speak at a convention that Father Martin was the keynote speaker, but I was going to speak for Al-Anon as an Al-Anon member. But I have to tell you, my very first question, my very first Al-Anon meeting was, just to verify here, I don't have to stop drinking, right? My family can't, but I'm okay if... And they basically said yes. So I'm supposed to speak at this convention as an Al-Anon member, and... what does any good alcoholic do? I went and got a new hairdo. I went and got a new dress. I got myself all purdied up. And I went out and celebrated the night before. And I wasn't staggering drunk, but my breath was kind of offensive. And I was still loaded. And they wouldn't let me speak. Yeah, I said to them, oh, no. I have okayed this. We Al-Anons don't have to stop drinking. To which they insisted, you're not speaking. So I went into a crying jag, as most good alcoholics will do, at least this one. And as I was walking down the hall, I see Father Martin. Oh, my God. I remembered all the Chalk Talk stuff as best I could, as loaded as there was. And I went over to him. I said, Father Martin, Ooh, when I started showing you Chalk Talk, my life got so much better. Could I at least shake your hand? And he said, I'll do something better. And he took me in his arms and he enveloped me. He wasn't a big, tall man, but he said, welcome. The nightmare is over. You now can go from your death to your life. Now, I was raised as an atheist, and here I got this little short Irish Catholic guy telling me, but he was speaking of my life. I haven't had a drink since that day. and I, a few years ago, a friend of mine who was a close friend of Father Martin knew the connection I had with him, and she gave me several of the personal items that she was willed of his. A few photographs of him at the end when he was told, you don't eat hot dogs, and here he is eating hot dogs. It's in black and white. A book or two of his that he had signed the covers of and stuff. But I tell you, one of my most sweetest valuable possessions today is they gave me his 50-year medallion that he wore. You know, we stand on those shoulders of these people, and it wasn't that I ran into him a lot, but I always remembered, and I was told back in 09 when he passed, that becomes my new mantra. So I say to anybody who's new here, the nightmare is over. You now can go from your death to your life. Thank you.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you. Thank you for the honor.
Wow. So what are the chances this woman's sitting in front of me? And she goes, well, you know, Father Martin. I go, Father Martin, I'm talking about him tomorrow. Thank you. There's nothing like history, and this is where we are. I am truly going to wrap it up, but I have something. Because I can't stop. One more. Just like the bar. I'll just take one more, then I'm going home. I do want to mention Father Michael J. And this is more current, and it's only because it's a story that has touched my life, and I hope I don't forget it. Father Michael was a Catholic priest, Franciscan. He was an alcoholic. He was also a gay man, and he was sober 23 years. He was also chaplain of the New York Fire Department. He was a long-term member of Dignity. He's a Franciscan. He'd be out in the streets talking to homeless people. He went to see men and women, or mostly men, who were dying and suffering of AIDS, and he would sit there with them. It's a great story, and he advocated for change within the Catholic Church about homosexuality. The next slide. Here is an iconic picture. He is known as the first fatality of September 11. As chaplain of the fire department, New York City's fire department, he was on the scene, and he went into the second building as it was crashing, and he was killed. And when the firemen saw their chaplain laying there, they carried him. This is a front page New York Times. They carried him down the street with all that smoke, and they were trying to find a Catholic church to bring him to. And there was another man, you could see him with the blue shirt, just while everyone, as we know, in a daze and walking. And he saw these firemen, this medic, struggling. They had found a chair and put Father Martin in it. And he joined them. He helped them carry this priest, this recovering alcoholic, to a church. And there is a film about this. I've watched it several times. And what happens to Italian guys, because you know it's really important we tell everyone's nationality. But it is. You could picture it. These two Italian guys are in there praying, and these firemen and medic come in with Father Martin dead. And they go, hey, give them last rites. It's a sacrament in the Catholic Church. And these guys are like, hey, I don't know anything about last rites. And he goes, pray over Father Martin. He's our chaplain. And what's happened, I talk about this because Father Martin was a recovering alcoholic. He was buried on his 23rd AA anniversary. So I wanted to share that miracles are still happening. Alcoholics are carrying the message and showing up and doing things for us, whether they're alcoholic or non-alcoholic, whether religious or non-religious. So I think that's my last slide. Do I have one more? Because I have something else. I'm going to end. There he is, New York Times, the fireman with Father Duffy, giving their blessing for Father Michael Judd. And in the gay parade in New York, they've named a street Michael Judd. I mean, it's a great story, and it's a great story of recovery because he did everything to help recovering people. And today we have a special way of
of sharing the blessings, my friend Joni is going to come up here, and we're going to end with something that is very dear to us. I had it read at my husband's memorial. I had it read many times, and Joan reads it with me. And it's called I Stand by the Door by Samuel Moore Shoemaker. So, I stand by the door. I neither go in, I neither go too far in, nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There's no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where a door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched, groping hands, feeling for the door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it.
So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, the door to God. The most important thing any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside that door as starving beggars die, on cold nights, in cruel cities, in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it, live because they have not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in and find him.
So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints, go all the way in. Go way down into the cavernous cellars and way up into the special attics. And it is a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements of withdrawal, of silence, of sainthood. Some must inhabit these inner rooms and know the depth and heights of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in. Sometimes I venture in a little further, but my place seems closer to the opening.
So I stand by the door. There is another reason why I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid, lest God and the zeal of his house devour them. For God is so very great and asks all of us. And these people feel a cosmic claustrophobia and want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. Somebody must be by the door to tell them that they are spoiled for the old life. They have seen too much. Once taste God and nothing but God will do anymore. Somebody must be watching for the frightened who seek to sneak out just where they came in, to tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in do not see how near these are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. Somebody must watch for those who have entered the door but would like to run away. So for them too.
I stand by the door. I admire the people who go way in, but I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they'd be able to help the people who have not yet found the door. The people who want to run away again from God, you can go in too deeply and stay too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place near enough to God to hear him and know he is there, but not so far from men as not to hear them, and remember where they are too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them, millions of them, but more important for me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I am intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait.
For those who seek it, I had rather be a doorkeeper.
So I stand by the door. By Reverend Sam Shoemaker, God bless, and thank you for being the door.